Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, welcome back. Great to have you with us. We roll through a Tuesday. Phillies are playing better of late. Kevin still isn't sure and doesn't believe that Delman Young is the answer.
But he's off the DL.
All right, let's get to Chris Broussard. He caused, what, they say controversy? I don't know. This was his opinion as expressed on Outside the Lines yesterday on ESPN.
I'm a Christian. I don't agree with homosexuality. I think it's a sin, as I think all sex outside of marriage between a man and a woman is. And LZ knows that. He and I have played on basketball teams together for several years. We've gone out, had lunch together. We've had good conversations, good laughs together. He knows where I stand, and I know where he stands. I don't, you know, criticize him. He doesn't criticize me and call me a bigot, call me ignorant, call me intolerant. And that I hear, and talking to some people around the league, there are a lot of Christians in the NBA. And they don't want to be, just because they disagree with that lifestyle, they don't want to be viewed and called bigoted and intolerant.
Now, today he released a statement saying, on Outside the Lines, as part of a larger, wide-ranging discussion of today's news, I offer my personal opinion as it relates to Christianity, a point of view that I have expressed publicly before. I realize that some people disagree with my opinion. I accept and respect that. As has been the case in the past, my beliefs have not and will not impact my ability to report in the NBA. I believe Jason Collins displayed bravery with his announcement today, and I have no objection to him or anyone else playing in the NBA. Then ESPN, of course, felt compelled to release a statement, you know, because they're a big corporate whatever entity, and you know, that's what they do. He said, we regret that a respectful discussion of personal viewpoints became a distraction from today's news. ESPN is totally committed to diversity and welcomes the Jason Collins announcement, blah, 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 blah. Okay, fine. All right. One thing that we have in this country is a diversity of opinion. We're not all in lockstep as we go along, right? If we were to open up the phone lines now and I were to ask you about what do you think about Obamacare, and we opened up the phone lines, what do you think of Obamacare? Do you think we're going to get the same opinion over and over and over again for the next 50 minutes? Now, that's a policy issue as opposed to a personal announcement. But just like you're entitled to give your opinion about Obamacare, and then somebody from Danville calls up and has the opposite opinion on Obamacare, he's allowed to express his opinion about this as to how he's raised. Now, again, my litmus test is simple. You respect me, I respect you. You like me, I like you. It's none of my business what you do in your life, so I really don't care one way or the other. Never have. As long as you're happy with your life, that's fine. I'm not gonna sit here and pontificate my standards of life to you and your standards of life to me. So I think that's how I looked at it. I mean, he said it yesterday. My first thought was, yeah, okay, fine, whatever. No, I suppose that it was important to a segment of the population that he come out, say this, and do this. I understand that. But in the end, isn't that segment of the population, don't they want eventually for the attitude to be, okay, fine, I don't care. But then when somebody comes out with a counter opinion and bases it on their upbringing, their religious background, and what they believe in life, people then start calling for his job. Well, this is the United States. Okay? There's a Constitution. He's a commentator. He's expected to commentate. So he did. I mean, ESPN brought him on the show. ESPN knows how he feels about this topic. He's talked with them before. They know. For them to sit there and say that they're, well, can you believe he said this? I mean, yeah, he said it before. He says, I'm a Christian. I don't agree with it. He thinks all sex outside of marriage between a man and a woman is also wrong. If you're openly living in an unrepentant sin, whatever it may be, then that's walking in open rebellion to God and to Jesus Christ. That was the exact quote from Chris Broussard. Okay, well, that's his opinion. Now, does it match up with the opinions of Barack and Michelle Obama or Bill Clinton or David Stern or, you know, others who have openly and strongly come out today? You know, great. Yeah. No, it doesn't. But as an American, he has the right to express that opinion. And that can't be forgotten either. He has the right to express that opinion. You, as a listener, have a right to say, well, I don't agree with that opinion, and I don't want to listen to him anymore. Because he was not inflammatory in what he said. That was not hate speech. Is, you know, if it's inflammatory, it's incite, you know, it's meant to incite, it's hateful. Okay, now there's a standard there at that point where, as an employer, you have to sit back and say, wait, do I want hate speech, inflammatory speech, speech that incites on my airwaves? That at that point becomes something where a management has to sit down and say, okay, we have to make a decision as to what we want on our air. Now, do I agree with his opinion? No, like I said, my standard is simple. People are people. It's none of my business. Live your life. If you're nice to me and respect me, believe me, I'm going to be nice to you and respect you right back. In the end, how well do we know each other anyway? Even close friends. So I think, you know, basic, you know, there's a basic decency. It's very, very important. And that basic decency comes out. We just had the situation in Boston just 2 weeks ago. First responders, EMS, runners, volunteers, running to where the bomb went off because they needed to help. They needed to stop bleeding. They needed to put belts on and for tourniquets and so forth. That's the best in people right there. And that's who we are. You see this all the time. You see this all the time in our area. How many times in our area where people are asked, we need help donate, you know, we need people to donate money to help out? Family loses a home. People donate clothing. Flooded out. People help out. How many times have we talked about the volunteer fire company being the best bargain a community can have and how much we need to support the volunteer fire company? These are all the good things, the decent things that make our country and our area very, very special. And it doesn't matter at that point. It didn't matter after the bombs went off in Boston, or after the waters rose after Katrina, or after the tornadoes hit in Joplin or Tuscaloosa. Did it matter at that point what anyone's sexuality was, what anyone's religion was, what anyone's race happened to be? No, it was people doing whatever they could to help people. And that's the bottom line. If you're good, likable, and respectful, people will be likable and respectful with you. We'll come back with more on News Radio 1070 WKOK. And again, still no picture for Kevin on the website.
It's all right. I'll post it later. Don't worry.
It's if you have access.
Well, I did a few minutes ago. We'll see how long it lasts. Maybe there's something you know that I don't.
No photo available means something. You should play John Lennon again. Our number, 1-800-795-9565, 1-800-795-9565, and the Hilscher's General Store hotline, powered by Hilscher's General Store, 7 miles south of Sealands Grove and Routes 11 and 15. Go to www.hilscherstore.com. And, of course, I'm safely ensconced with the door locked, just in case somebody whose photo isn't on the website wants to break in. In the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 to 15 in Hummel's Wharf. It's great to have you with us on this day. The Phillies getting a little bit better, but you are not yet a believer.
I'm just not. It's not that I'm not a believer. It's just that I'm right now conservative with my hopes.
Why is that? Well, the bandwagon awaits you.
Well, you know, I've been optimistic so many times in the last year and almost a half now. Now, I realize it's a 3-game win streak. I realize it's a sweep of the Mets, and that's great. That's great. Moves you to third. But they're still 12-14, and at best 13-14 in April. Now, the way the month started, that's actually not half bad.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm still just reserving my jubilation for the moment. Because, let's face it, this team still is not scoring a ton of runs, and it's also leaving small villages on base.
Yeah, there's no question. No question.
Although the pitching's gotten, and I don't think the pitching's been terrible from the starters all year. I mean, there's been a lot of, you know, 2-0s, 2-1, 4-2 games, a lot of close games. Phillies just aren't scoring any runs, and it's hard to win when you don't score any runs.
Well, they're far from last in the league in runs scored. They've scored more runs than Washington has.
Which really is hard to believe, seeing as they're about a game and a half or a game above the Phillies right now.
Right. So, I mean, that's a plus.
But you said there's no hot team in baseball. I don't know. I think Boston and Atlanta would qualify pretty close.
That's not what I said.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm sorry. I paraphrased incorrectly. What did you say?
I said right now there's no great team.
Great team. Okay. All right.
Okay. There's a difference between great and hot. Okay. Kate Upton's hot. No. No.
But Boston winning five in a row now?
Or whatever her name is.
Thank you, pop culture king.
Part of that's a product of the Astros coming to town. But Boston has played well. They're playing 720 ball. They have a winning record at home, a winning record on the road. Are they a great team? No, they are not a great team. Are they a hot team? Yes. Are they a good team to a very good team? Yes. But there are no great teams right now in the majors.
Yeah, but a winning record on the road? They're 7-2 on the road.
I know. And they have to go back out now. I mean, they've just come through off a long homestand. That included Houston. Now, for the Phillies, what they need to do is they need to be more patient at the plate. Now, the return of Carlos Ruiz changes the dynamics of the club.
That makes me happy. Very happy to see Carlos Ruiz back.
What a relief on this end that we were able to somehow carve through that ground.
Well, right now, when you look at the but you look at the Phillies lineup with or without Carlos Ruiz right now, who scares you in the lineup if you're an opposing team?
Well, Ryan Howard comes up, I'm worried. Chase Utley comes up, I'm worried.
I'm not as worried about. Right
Michael
now.
Young comes up, I'm worried.
Michael Young has been a pleasant surprise.
It is still Ryan Howard coming to the plate. If you're sitting there as a pitcher and that's Ryan Howard at the plate, I'm still not making a mistake to him because that mistake could land how far away. You just don't know. His past history is too good in terms of his ability to drive the ball. Is he slumping? Yeah, there's no doubt he's slumping. There's no doubt. He is slumping. But getting Carlos Ruiz back is huge. Now, is he slumping to the point where, yeah, I mean, let me put it this way. He's hitting 286 right now.
No, wait, who's hitting 286 now? Howard?
Ryan Howard is.
Okay. I thought that's who you're talking about, but I wasn't sure.
So you don't sit there and go, hey, yeah, he's hitting 182.
What are some of the other numbers, though? What are the RBIs?
16.
Yeah.
I mean, well, and ends up being projecting to 96.
He should be well over 100 RBIs.
Well, 96 is not bad.
No, but there's a lot of money being spent for 96 RBIs. That's the point I'm making.
I understand that, okay? But you aren't paying the money, so...
Oh, yes, I am. I looked at Philly's tickets for the last couple of days, and I'm paying the money, believe me.
Oh, come on. You've got connections. You get it for free. Michael Young hitting 352. All right.
Not bad for a guy who really didn't take to the plate in the last several years.
He's a professional hitter. He is a pro's pro at the plate.
Or I'm sorry, take to the field rather. I didn't mean take to the field.
He's always been a hitter. He's always been a hitter. Chase Utley, 295. Knocked in 18. He's on a better than 100 RBI pace. Okay. Not bad. His pace right now would be 108 RBIs. Ryan Howard. Now, the guy they need to get more out of is Jimmy Rollins. Got to get more out of Jimmy Rollins, all right? Have to. He can't just have 12 runs scored. He has to get on base, make things happen. This team's on base percentage is .303. This is where you're hoping a guy like Ruiz steps in and what he does defensively, how he handles pitchers, how he keeps guys close to the bag at first, ability to throw runners out, huge. Hey, that's big. Halliday goes tonight against McAllister, by the way, at Progressive. But they're 25th in the majors. There are only five teams worse at on-base percentage than the Phillies. So when you look at the batting average, which is .252 as a team, which is 13th in all of baseball, slightly above the halfway mark. It's the 25th and on-base percentage that is killing them. They need to be better technicians at the plate, running counts deeper at the plate, fouling key pitches off, you know, not always putting the ball in play, you know, having the ability to take a pitch, here and there, not going after the first pitch. You need to run counts and get starters out. That on-base percentage needs to go up. The Pirates, for example, we talked about the Pirates being 22nd when they went to Philadelphia last week, correct?
Yes.
Okay. The Pirates are now 13th in on-base percentage.
Well, they gave away Monday night's game. There's no question about it, or they would have swept.
So, that's where it is. They need to be more patient at the plate. And, of course, much better in the clutch driving runners in. That's why they're 20th in runs scored, despite being 13th in batting average.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, so Kevin, in the break, it was just one complaint after another.
It was not a complaint. I actually gave a compliment. I said Antonio Bastardo has been a pleasant surprise, and I actually get excited when he goes into the game for the Phillies right now. I don't get upset. I used to get upset, but I get excited when he goes in now. At what, 0.96 ERA, only one home run is the only run he's given up this year in, about 10 innings. I cannot complain about that at all. Even I can't find anything negative in that.
I don't know about that.
I just wonder where all my Mets friends are now.
Oh, that was bitter.
You know, I got all these calls from Mets fans last year when things were getting ugly. Where are my Mets fans now?
Boy, that is... That's a challenge right there. 1-800-795-9565. You're a Mets fan. You want to call in and challenge Kevin ear to ear. Because obviously, obviously bitter fighting words from you.
I'm just saying. You know, just saying.
What is that all about? You're just shoving it in people's faces.
It's a Mets Phillies thing. It's like a Yankees Red Sox thing.
Really?
No, now don't sit there and say you don't that doesn't. No, don't even say that. I know better.
Well, what?
Don't say that there's no like rivalry as far as you're concerned between the Yankees and the Red Sox. Come on, I don't buy that.
Of course, there's a rivalry.
I don't believe any. I've never met a Red Sox fan that says, "Oh no, it's all right. The Yankees are okay."
No, there is a rivalry between the two. There is a rivalry. So rivalries make sports fun. I mean, that's the part that's great. That's why in college, that's why I bemoaned the loss over time of Missouri-Kansas in basketball, Nebraska-Oklahoma in football, Pitt and Penn State in football.
Yeah, but I believe Penn State got a really good rivalry after Pitt went away. And I don't know if the timing is right on that or not. You'll have to correct me on that. But I felt that there was more of a Michigan-Penn State rivalry that developed because of the fact that the Pitt one went away. Now, does the timing on that make sense or not?
Well, I mean, they have a rivalry with Ohio State and a rivalry with Michigan. The problem is that while Michigan considers Penn State a rival, and Ohio State definitely considers Penn State a rival, they are not the primary rival on that side.
That's true. Although, okay, I've had conversations with several Ohio State fans on the way out of the game, and I said, and they agree that there's one thing that Penn State and Ohio State fans agree on is they want Michigan to lose.
But at the same time, it still comes down to the fact that Ohio State fans consider Penn State a rival, without a doubt.
Sure.
And Ohio State considers Penn State a rival, without a doubt. But they are not the rival and the game they must win on the schedule. It's Michigan. That's what Penn State's been lacking in football for a while since Pitt went off the schedule at the end of the season. Now, the Pitt-Penn State thing was already going in kind of a was going in kind of an odd direction anyway. Because when Joe got on board, Penn State at that point was kicking the daylights out of Pitt at the end. And then Tony Dorsett came in, closed the gap, and probably the 74 through 82 games, the intensity was off the charts, and especially in 76, 77, 70 through 82, it was, it might have been the single most heated rivalry in the country, even more so at that moment than Auburn, Alabama, more so than Ohio State, Michigan, because the number one, the stakes were higher. Pitt won the national championship in 76. Penn State played for it in 78. Had to beat Pitt at the end to get there. Penn State played for the title again in 80, you know, in 81, Pitt was number one. Penn State went and beat them, knocked them out of it. 82, Penn State won it. So the stakes in those years between Penn State and Pitt made it the hottest rivalry in the country. Logic tells you that because they were two of the better teams in the country, period. And in four of those, let's see, let's just go, let's see, 76, 7, 8, 9, 81, okay. In four of the 7 years, one of the two of them was playing in that game to play for the national championship.
Well, 81 and 82 might have been the one of the biggest matchups, at least for rankings, for both teams.
Well, I mean, you know, I mean, same thing though. I mean, other years. I mean,
yeah, because it wasn't 81 that Pitt went where 10 was 10-0 coming in.
Yeah, and Penn State won 48-14.
Right.
That's the night I got my start in the Penn State Sports Network. I had to fill in for basketball for Fram. And each time in 4 out of 7 years, one of the two teams needed to win that game to play for the national title. 76, Pitt won it. I think they won it 24-7. I think the game was 7-7 at halftime. And then, to Johnny Major's credit, he took Tony Dorsett and flipped him to fullback. 77 was a great game at the end of the year in the snow. I, you know, see, and here's the pattern. You notice all these games are in Pittsburgh. And finally, in 78, they finally get the game to Beaver Stadium. Penn State needs it to play for the national title against Alabama. And that was the Mike Gooman touchdown that won it. In 79, Pitt was just flat out better. 80, the two teams were relatively even. Todd Blackledge threw a big interception at the end of the game that Carlton Williamson picked off. 81 was the 48-14 game. Pitt had, needed to win that game to play for the national championship. Penn State blew them out after being behind 14-0. And then in 82, back at Beaver Stadium, Penn State needed to win that game to get to the Sugar Bowl so they could win the national championship, and they won a tight game. I think Matt Barr kicked a field goal finally to, was it Matt Barr? No. It was Nick Gansitano kicked a field goal late and finally, you know, put it away, and that ended it. I think they won like 17-10 or something like that over Pitt. But they need, you know, that's how good the rivalry was at that point. But after that, it disintegrated. You know, 83, Penn State won big. Pitt then won big in 84. But then after that, 85, Penn State shut them out. 86, Penn State routed them. 87, 88, 9, 90, 91. I mean, Penn State won 7 straight games, and they weren't close. 92, I think they played 92. But I think that was the one where Lee Rubin ran a blocked extra point back for 2 points. I think it's the last time Penn State scored 2 points in a play like that. So they won 8 straight games, and they weren't close.
Longest Pitt winning streak is 14 years, from 1922 to 38. Longest Penn State winning streak was 10, from 66 to 75.
Yeah, but that was when Penn State de-emphasized football. Penn State in that 14 years, Penn State wasn't giving out scholarships. You realize that?
I did not know that.
Okay? They weren't giving out scholarships.
It's hard to believe when this series resumes, it'll be the 97th meeting and they haven't met in 16 years.
No kidding. I did the last game.
It just amazed me. Now, all right, do you know the all-time series record?
Oh,
within three.
48, 47, and I don't know, three or four.
That's not bad. 48, 42, and four in favor of Penn State. It's actually slightly frightening that you were that close.
You know, I mean, look, Pitt could have guaranteed. Look, I always laugh when somebody comes up and says, you know, it's Penn State's fault and this, that, and the other thing. Look, if they went along with an all-sports Eastern Conference, when Joe proposed it, instead of going to the Big East. And look, Big East basketball has been great for Pitt. Not good for Pitt, great for Pitt. Okay? And Penn State had to kind of fend for itself in the Atlantic 10 and so forth. But look, you have to make decisions. That's what they decided to do. Well, when you decide that you want to go into the Big East basketball conference, and then Penn State's offered the Big Ten 8 years later, okay, 8 years later, look, you just can't always have your cake and eat it too, you know. Well, what do you mean you're not going to play us anymore? Well, we offered to play you every year by getting a conference. You chose to do this. So we just kind of sat there, and all of a sudden they came to us, and we said, yes, I'm sorry. You have almost an entire generation now that's grown up that has never seen a Penn State Pitt.
I was just thinking that when right before you said that, I thought, wow, with 16 years, there's a lot of people that haven't seen this rivalry.
Okay, if you're born in 1992, you are 21 years old now. All right? There have been four Penn State Pitt games played. And if you're born in 1992, you will be 24 years old until they play again. What does the rivalry mean to them? Zero. And the intensity of the rivalry, where it was at, where it had true fire to it, where the two sides were dead even against one another, is 28 years ago. 28 years. Because starting in 1985, Pitt was not in the same ballpark with Penn State. '85, '86, '87, '88, '89, '90, '91, '92, all Penn State and all big scores. Then they came back, they played the four games, Penn State won the first three. Some pretty, you know, the first one was pretty close, in fact. Then Pitt won the last time out 12-0. Yeah, Three River Stadium. Jack and I did that game.
92 was an ugly one. Was that like 57? They all were like that.
They all were like that. 31-0 in 85. I think it was like 31-14 in 86. 87 was easy. 88, Penn State didn't have a great season, still beat them. Penn State was 5-6 that year, still won. 89, Penn State won big. 90, 91, 92. They were all big scores, lopsided. When you're routing a team left and right, that's no rivalry. Then you look back at the years of 76, Pitt won, went to the national championship. 77, Penn State won, I think they won by 2, 15, 13 or something like that. Then 78, Penn State won, I think it was something like, I think that may have been like 17-10.
17-10.
79 was 32-14.
29-13. Pitt won that one.
In 79,
29-14.
80 was 14-9,
yep.
I want to say. 48-14. Then I want to say it was 17-10 in 82.
19-10.
19, then 24-24 tie in 83.
Much better than two of the other four ties.
And, you know, I remember that one because that was the clock got all messed up at the end of the game.
Well, the other two I was and talking then, about were in the early 20s when it was nothing, yeah, nothing.
Right. And then, well, that the 83 one was, I was the third announcer that year. It was Gil Santos, John Grant, and me. So I was the third announcer. Part of my responsibilities as the third announcer is I was supposed to do the postgame show with Joe. So I'm on the field. They're trying to drive down, get a tying field goal. Clock runs out. At least the clock in the stadium ran out. So I left and went down the back into the interview area to get him. And I'm waiting. And the janitor came by with a headset on. He had, you know, this is 1983, so it's a transistor radio. And he says, "Man, can you believe how they tied that game?" I'm like, "What? You mean they tied the game?" He goes, "Yeah, they tied the game." So the first question I asked Joe was, "Joe, it was 24-21 Pitt. The clock showed zeros. How does that end up being a tie?" All right. Now, I thought for being 25 years old, it was a good opening question.
And Joe's answer was?
He says, "Well," he says, "you know, they told us that the clock was had malfunctioned. There was actually a six-second difference between the two. They told us with 42 seconds to go in the game that there was a six-second difference. So we knew, and Pitt knew, that there was actually six additional seconds each time it went off. So that's why we knew we could go out and line. That's why we ran the play to Dozier and why we lined up and brought Gansettano in, because we knew there was still 6 seconds left when he did."
I love story time with Steve.
We'll wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Ready for a quality pre-owned vehicle? Well, get them before they go to auction at Sunbury Motors. Go to sunburymotors.com and click on Pre-Auction Blowout. With so many great deals in bloom, you'll be thinking spring. Like a 2012 Ford Fiesta 5-door hatchback SE, our lowest price promise, $13,494. 2011 Ford Fusion 4-door sedan, call for a price, 888-536-8017. 2007 Toyota FJ Cruiser 4-wheel drive, $17,458. 2008 Ford Ranger 4-wheel drive super cab, $17,995. 2012 Ford Escape 4-door limited, perfect for the family, $23,498. And a 2010 Chrysler Town & Country Wagon Limited, $24,477. All come with a Carfax report and our lowest price promise. Pre-auction blowout. 24/7 at sunburymotors.com, at the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at our dealership, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sunbury Motors, a tradition of trust since 1915.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us. Closing things out for a Tuesday, Steve Samsel joins us tomorrow along with Joe Bautista. Steve Samsel on media, Joe Bautista on hockey. Also, we'll launch a complete News Radio 1070 WKOK investigation into the missing Kevin Herr photograph on the company website.
Won't be missing much longer, don't worry.
Are you sure?
I still have access, so I'm good yet.
So do others.
Listen, as long as you don't change the passwords, I'm good to go.
I wouldn't have said that. Our number
1-800-795-9565. I shouldn't have given him an idea.
1-800-795-9565. I thought you were doing all right till you opened the door of the dark room.
Sometimes you just don't know when to stop talking, you know? And there's thousands of people listening right now going, uh-huh.
How come we didn't get the tire guy on today? Why does Lawrence get all the people like that?
we're just not as entertaining as Mark Lawrence, I guess. I don't know.
I'm not happy.
Yeah, you're a little disappointed, huh?
Oh, yeah. It's killing me. What's the deal now? We don't have no spare tires in the world?
Oh, wait. This just came over. Vijay Singh won't be suspended over use of deer antler spray. Yes, deer antler spray is back.
Well, Greg Norman, though, wants blood testing done in golf. Okay, that's what he wants.
There's doping in golf?
Well, what do you think this deer antler spray is about? What do you think? It makes you smell better?
No, I know. I mean, I remember the whole thing when it was coming out right before the playoffs and the Super Bowl and all that fun stuff. But and I remember sales of it were skyrocketing at that point, too.
Yes, they were. He was one of those guys listed in it.
I just never thought we'd be talking about it again.
It's something that is it's going to be there for a while until they make a definitive statement about it or about testing. Greg Norman was very, very outspoken in his view that they needed blood testing in professional golf.
Listen, I'm willing to try deer antler spray if it'll avoid my slice next week. That's what I'm saying right now.
Well, we're not going to play golf with somebody who wants to play like that.
You're just worried that you won't have enough entertainment watching mine start over three holes to the left of where we're playing. That's all you're worried about.
Now, how often have you played so far this year?
Let me think. Yeah, all right.
You haven't played at all?
Does the driving range count?
Oh, boy. Greg Norman says testing in golf is disgraceful. He said you only have to look what happened to Vijay Singh just recently to know that the drugs issue is there. See, he targeted Vijay Singh in his comments.